Alright, welcome to Series 5, Episode 8 of Conversational Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
We have episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 5, Episode 8, the screenplay was done by Harry Duffin. It was directed by Sally Ann Kerr, and the episode synopsis was read out by Sabine.
Ebony goes back to where it all began, but Siva has reservations. Reunions at the mall are marked by tragic news, while Mega has plans for Amber.
Okay, I'm going to say something. I don't know if you guys felt the same. When it comes to the writing, you can see what Harry's trying to do. Again, he's giving the characters more dialogue to express what they're thinking and feeling, which is always appreciated and has been missing for a long time. But there's something weird about the dialogue. I don't know how much control he had. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like the plot is just so absurd that there was very little Harry could do to make it sound right with the characters talking about it. And I'd say the same thing with the direction. I feel like the direction of the scenes are actually really good by Sally. I think she directed the scenes and staged them quite nicely. But the direction of the actors feels uncanny and weird. And a little off kilter. Like, there was no one to say, hey, you want to read that line this way? Or, you know, it's almost like the actors weren't really directed. So I felt like really weird about the episode. Cause I'm like, I can see the effort in the writing, but I don't feel like the writing can save what's happening. And I can see the effort in the directing. I can see some really great shots and stuff, but the characters, like the actors, the way they've been directed to act is it feels very Twilight Zone. There's just something off about this.
Yeah, I agree. I think it feels like they're floating in space. There's nothing to anchor them into the scene. So it feels unreal. Yeah, I agree with you. It feels unrealistic. It's odd. And I don't know if you guys seen that Brady Bunch movie when they've got the sister in it and she goes like, sure, Jan. Every time Gail opened her mouth, she sounded like Jan. Her line to
like,
yeah, George Glass. I get what you're saying. It's because that was a parody of the acting of the 70s when the show premiered. So it is an exaggerated way they express the way they're talking, and it sounds ridiculous, but it's supposed to in that movie because it's a parody of the show. And yet I feel like there's a lot of talking in this episode from these characters that sounds like that. Like, it's a parody of the tribe. And it's like, who directed you to deliver your lines this way?
There's just so many odd things in this episode.
That's actually, thank you, Tamsin. You nailed it. Because I was like, it's just weird. There are a couple scenes that feel grounded, or one character will feel completely grounded, but the other character won't feel grounded. They will not feel like they're in the same reality or even in the same scene or have gone through the same things together. And I'm just like, this is very uncanny to me.
I felt that the most noticeable with Gail and with Trudy.
Yeah. There's such an awkward scene between Trudy and Amber where the dialogue is fine, but the way they're delivering the dialogue feels weird. It feels so unnatural the way they're talking to each other. Even though what they're saying feels natural. Like, what they're saying, what's written on paper is fine. But the way they're saying it, it's like weird. Like, this could be, if this was, if you added like singing, if they burst out into song, this would feel like a weird musical episode of a sitcom where you accept that it's just a bizarro reality where all of a sudden the characters are singing and you would accept it because that's what's going on. That is how the line delivery from a lot of the characters feels. Like, this is just that weird one-off episode and we're supposed to know it is and be amused by it, but not everybody's on board with it. So, it's so odd. Like, what happened? I want to know. Did everybody get their lines like an hour before the cameras flipped on? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you do wonder from what we were told. That may well have been the case.
That would have, oh, we've rewritten today's script. Here you go. You have 5 minutes, guys.
Yeah.
Or how out of order was these scenes filmed?
It feels very out of order. Yeah. There are a lot of stuff in this. I don't know if anyone clocked Jack's hair. So it goes from that bright, bright red. And then the next scene, it's completely toned down. So you can, like, obviously they all film this out of order. All TV's filmed out of order. But you've got the feeling with this that they kind of put this episode together from what they had in the editing suite. Just it's scenes like that they had. The
actors don't even know what came. Like, when they were asked to film a scene, they are unaware of what was supposed to have come before the scene they were acting and what's supposed to come after. And I, when you mentioned Trudy, I'm like, yeah, a lot of scenes with her feel that way. It's not just her, but she is an obvious choice for it being noticeable, where there is a scene, there's some scenes with her and it's just like, does she know that the scene before this is what she learned, or the episode before it's only been 24 hours since she learned something terrible. You know what I mean? You're just like, was Antonia told when this scene is supposed to take place? And what her emotional state should be? Has she any idea? I mean,
that is the responsibility of the director. Because obviously when they're filming these things, they're filming them out of sequence. They're filming maybe the end of something, and then the next day it will be the beginning of the end of the thing they've just done. And so it is up to the responsibility of the director to kind of explain, like you say, the emotional beats of the scene that we're trying to capture, because it is just words on a page with occasional stage direction. And it's up to the director to, like, help the cast through that, especially when they're so young as well.
And that's why I was like, the direction is so confusing, because the scenes themselves, the way that they've staged it and the camera work looks good and I think is well directed. But the actors, I don't feel like anyone was really directing them in all of these scenes.
The more I think about it, the more I agree with your, it could have been one of those weird musical episode ideas.
But, like, not everybody's in the musical episode.
Yeah.
It's only half the cast. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I know this is a pie in the sky thought, but I wonder if this was intentional. Because, for me watching it, like, the whole Ebony and Siva juxtaposition of Ebony being this over-the-top bride of Dracula kind of thing, and Siva being this, what the hell is going on? I feel like that kind of weird pairing is in every single scene with two different actors. And I feel like, I don't want to say it's intentional because the show is obviously a mess production-wise, but I feel like it could have been. Like, it feels how it feels like.
Yeah, you're right, and there is that relationship.
It's always two characters through every single scene. It's like, you've both been given up some weird direction, and no one's like meeting in the middle. It's weird. I don't understand it.
Everyone was like, guys, it's an episode 8 of a season. Something weird has got to happen.
And it would be different if every scene was like that. If every scene tonally was like that, where there was a little bit of a tongue in cheek. But I don't. I feel like there are a couple scenes where, like, okay, this is a bit grounded. This is a little bit realistic. Okay. But it feels out of place with the rest of the episode. Okay.
I don't know. Every scene I felt it. Trudy and Jay, Jill and it's just every single scene I felt that weird, just polar opposite direction. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just.
It kind of reminds you of like a Star Trek episode where they always have one of those episodes where they end up back on the ship. They've been somewhere else and then everyone's acting a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And we find out that it's been like taken over by aliens or it's a dream or something. You know,
it's odd. A bizarre episode. I can't say it's like good or bad. It's just weird. It's bizarre.
It's pretty bad though.
I mean, I was interested. So, you know what I mean? Like, I was actually kind of invested in what was going on and what the characters are talking to each other about. But all the whole time I was just like, huh. Wait, something is tingling the back of my neck. This is off, man. Like, I didn't hate myself watching this. I wasn't like, this sucks, don't care. I didn't feel that way. That's why I say, I don't feel like it's bad, but I can't say it's good.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I could, hand on heart, recommend anyone to watch that episode if they've not seen The Tribe before.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't recommend any of these last two seasons to anyone who's never seen The Tribe before. Are you kidding me? You only watch these seasons because you've already been invested in what came before.
Well, no. I mean, you've got people like Matt who jumped on 4.
Mm-hmm. That's different. They liked it. They found it on their own. That's different. You're talking about, would we recommend it? Absolutely not.
We didn't recommend.
I would not have recommended to Matt to start on season 4. I'd be like, you're interested in the show? 4. Here, let's start with season 1 or season 2 even, you know? Wouldn't recommend you start on 4. God bless him.
And yeah, certainly not this episode. This episode.
No. I know. I've seen parts of this episode so many times, but that was because I needed a Trudy and Jack screen caps.
I was going to say.
Like, why? Why would you watch this one? I mean, I suppose it's the camp of the wedding. You know, that is bizarre. You know,
They put that wedding together really quickly as well. Kudos to them, you know?
Well, it helps when there's no guest or groom.
But the dress, though, and all the candles, I mean, that could have been easy to find in a school.
Right, yeah, let's jump into the specifics.
Needs a little TLC.
I still don't get it. I mean, it's a big place to defend.
I know lots of places that would be better.
No. We stay here.
But why? Why here?
Because this is where it begins. This is where it all began.
Ebony takes Java and Siva to their old school and plans to use it as their base of operations, turfing out the current inhabitants. Siva tries to point out the tactical disadvantages of the building, but Ebony explains that it has to be here. This is where she first met Zoot and where it all began. So yeah, panel, what do you think of another new location and the reuse of the Pribe Tribe flashback scenes from Series 2?
I don't mind the use of a new location that we're supposed to be familiar with already from Season 1, or well, from the Season 2 flashbacks. But yeah, I don't know, it felt a bit off.
I personally don't feel invested in this storyline at all. Or the location. And I agree with Siva. It seems crazy. It's such a big site to try and defend. Just the three of them.
I think that's part of the thing that's going on, though. I mean, Java has this whole plan. This whole scheme planned out. And Siva is still completely oblivious to most of that.
I was too hung up on stupid things. All I kept thinking is, wait. I think it was established that you guys went to school in the suburbs. So why is the school smack dab in the middle of the city? That's where Amber and Dal went to school. They were the city kids. And it's just a stupid thing to get hung up on, but maybe it's because I don't care about the storyline either. So I was just looking at dumb stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at really stupid things, like the flashbacks. I'm like, that's not the same classroom.
Nope.
That happened. It's so dumb. Like, exactly. I was hung up on really dumb things, like the kids who were living there. I was like, when they ran, I'm like, you didn't take any of your stuff? You didn't, this is what you've been living in, this squalor? You didn't even clean up this one room? Like, I was paying attention to all the wrong things.
See, what annoyed me was the amount of books in the school, while we know that Zoot managed to burn all the books.
It was
yeah,
dumb.
I mean, you would have thought you would have started there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
But I, you know, the dialogue being said is good. I appreciate that the characters are expressing exactly what they're feeling and what they're thinking. I appreciate that because we went through a whole season where we didn't know what anybody was thinking most of the time and why they were doing anything. So I like that. Ebony is completely off her rocker, so she can be excused for a lot of her performance. She is leaning into the camp of all of it. It felt very camp, especially with Siva's facial expressions in the back the whole time. Like, this is crazy. What the heck is going on? What is happening here? And Java just smiling sweetly and enjoying watching her sister in the pits of madness and having the time of her life. So I appreciated the dialogue. Oh, and I wanted to say this. It's clear that Java's character, actress is pregnant, and she is glowing. She's never looked better. All I could think was, oh my God, is she Megan? Is she Megan? I'm not sure which one plays
Megan.
Java.
Megan.
Okay.
Megan.
She looked so beautiful. I couldn't stop staring at her face. I was like, my gosh, pregnancy looks so good on her. Like, she's literally glowing. She's radiant. Mm.
Say, while we're on the subject of the pregnancy, though, why could we not have got another outfit for Java? Why is she dressed as a techno? It's ridiculous at this point. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's just getting kind of a little bit like taking me out of the scenes, because every time you're trying to see how they're covering her up, here she's behind this box, she's behind this person, camera's tilted just up above it. It's like, okay,
yeah.
it's taking you out just a little bit too much now. I was like, okay, I get it. I know she's pregnant, but you got to do something else here.
Yeah. These sitcom tricks. Come on, guys. Yeah.
They got to get her out of her techno gear, because it just doesn't make sense at this point that Ram or Java or Jay are still dressing as technos. One's trying to go incognito in Liberty. She's left the technos. And Jay has apparently left the technos. Like, just get changed. It's because not that hard.
Because they treat the audience as though they're watching the Care Bears, and they need to be able to identify mm-hmm. their characters very easily. And Care Bears, they're all different color. And here they're like, if we change the uniforms, they might not be able to tell who it is. So
they might think Shiva.
It's the laziest shorthand ever.
But yeah, especially with her. Like, we're supposed to believe that, you know, she was Mega's prisoner, and, you know, she was the bad guy, and she was no longer supposed to be like that.
And
so why is she still in that outfit?
And you can't even give him credit for being like, oh, the reason Java and Ram haven't changed out of their techno uniforms is because in their heart they're still technos. Because it's like, well, then what about frickin' Jay? You're trying to convince us he's not a techno.
He absolutely is.
You know, it's like there's no thought put behind it other than the audience is too stupid to be able to recognize them if we change their clothes.
And it wouldn't even take a lot to change Jay's clothes, because we've seen him with that camouflage bomber jacket. All he needs is like a black t-shirt and those cargo trousers that he wears. And that is a different outfit. Wouldn't even be that much. He wouldn't even have had to have changed the basics of what he wears either.
But don't think about it. You tried it. There's no rhyme or reason.
He already had a decent other outfit on.
It'll never not be a bizarre situation that they didn't change these people's clothes. It'll never not be bizarre. Like, no matter what, no matter how much thought we put into it, it will never make sense that Jay is still wearing his techno uniform, that Ram is wearing his techno uniform, that Java's wearing it now. Like, there's no reason for it. It's laziness. That's all it is. I don't get it at all.
Do you think they're still wearing them in the book?
Do you think they are?
Oh, my God.
Like, it's referenced sometimes. Yeah, they are.
No, seriously, no. Because I didn't know that. I'd like block that out. Oh, God.
Oh, we'll get there. You'll enjoy it by then.
What do you think of the idea, like, just finish it up, like, the school over something like the Horton Bailey Hotel?
Well, I guess they can't go back to the hotel, can they? Because the technos are already there. And I guess what she's trying to do is she's trying to consolidate her power in a recognizable location, another recognizable iconic location. So she's saying, you know, yeah, we were at the hotel and that's where we were, but it actually started here at this school. This is where things kicked off with Sue, because she can't get to that other location. So I guess she's trying to build the myth from what she's got.
It also makes sense for her madness. She's been trying to make sense of seeing Zoot this whole time. And so she's been trying to find meaning in seeing him, you know? And so she finally reached a point where she's like, we're fated, you know, that's what this is all mm-hmm. about. That's the only thing that would explain why she's going mad and seeing him, you know, it's formed out of desperation. And so, yeah, if you're trying to create meaning out of your delusions of seeing someone, you know, for a fact is dead and has been for a long time. And, yeah, you're going to turn everything into a mythos, as you said, Tamsin. She's mm-hmm. created the myth to give this whole thing meaning, because that's the only thing that can make possible sense to her. Because otherwise she has to admit, I'm going crazy. Which, you know, she was afraid is what was happening. That's why she was so scared mm-hmm. and crying. Like, I don't know what's going on. And finally she had to embrace it. No, I'm not going crazy. This is meant to happen. This is important. This is bigger. It has a point.
Crazy, my sister seeing him.
Right, you know, it has a point, you know, and leaning into it. And so, yeah, it's like, if you can't get to the hotel where you guys originally had your Locos location, but that wasn't the original location. The Locos started in the suburbs, you know, and they eventually made their way into mm-hmm. the city and took, and it, they weren't even in the hotel. They were in the train yard, you know, so it's like, it's the way a lot of mythos have to begin. The person who's in the Delulu has to create it. And so I think in her sense of her being mad and losing her mind, it does make sense. She's desperately trying to create meaning. And so it's like, it all started here where I met him. You know, that's what makes it important.
And it makes sense, you know, because she's going for this one. Jaffa went for the mole, where Sue died and Brady was born.
Yep, he turned that into the mythos that he was creating about Zoot. And
well, she can't use them all, so...
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. I just think the hotel has more meaning to the city, and they would have rallied better there. But, yeah, you guys make a pretty good point.
Like, logically, yes. You know, the hotel, the mall, these are actually important locations. But she's not logical right now.
And they can't access them either, can they? But, I mean, aren't the technos in the hotel, though?
Yeah, but that would have made for a good season. It would have made it would have changed things up. The technos get kicked out of the hotel.
Yeah.
How we start off with the local, whatever they're called, Zootists. That would have been a nice setup for the season.
If that was the plan to try to take over, because obviously they're not in a position mm-hmm. where they could do that right now. There's only three of them. They can't take over the hotel. They're on the run. But if that had been their plan to get back the hotel, then I think you're right. That could have mm-hmm. worked and added meaning. But, you know, that would mm-hmm. take effort. Mm-hmm. That would take a lot of effort. So they just need a new location. I feel the school isn't used in a way that makes it an interesting location. I think it could have been.
Yeah, that's my problem as well. Looking ahead, like it's not but utilized
It's not utilized in a way that makes it an interesting location to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just a very boring one. We get one classroom pretty much the whole time. We get a hallway. I think we get like an auditorium, like a gym, you know, but there really isn't, it's not an interesting set to look at.
No, Tommy Zoot scratched that onto the desk. No, he did not.
No.
It's wild.
If anyone did, it was Jaffa.
Right.
And can I say what I think my problem with this is? It's, you know, when you write in fan fiction, right? And you're like, what should I do with these characters? And I need to create a villain. But what if I did this, then that? And it all becomes really generic, right? It becomes like, Zoot's back. Is he? No, it's crazy AI. Ebony's going to marry Zoot, but no, it's crazy AI. You know, we go back to the school and on the desk, it's written Power and Chaos. And Zoot wrote that in. You know, this is written by a real Zoot fan, okay? That's what this feels like. It feels like really the laziest fan fiction you've ever read. But actually, I've never read fan fiction that was this lazy.
I have, and I agree with you. Mm-hmm. It definitely feels like bad fan fiction. Like, it's the kind of fan fiction that like, I'll like respect it because it's bonkers, and I'm like, hey, go for it, you know what I mean? But I'm not going to say it's good. Like,
you go in expecting, yeah. It is bad, but let's roll with it.
But it's literally forgivable because it's just a fan creating what they wish they wanted to see. And it's like, it's for free. Go for it. Have fun. But when you're being paid to perform, make a show, it's like, it's less forgivable. You're just like, this is what you guys went with.
And I think it's worse because in a fan fiction, you also reference things, don't you? Like, oh, the Guardian will put a reference in. And they do that in there. They talk about, like, the Guardian and if he hadn't gone Coco Banana, you know, and it's like, this is so bad.
Those poor kids. They had the school to sleep in. Now they lost their home.
But at least Lottie will end up in Liberty.
In a better place.
Yeah.
I do love that first shot of her. All I could think was, that girl has got such a beautiful face. Like, I remember the first time I thought, this girl is going to be gorgeous when she gets older. Like, I don't know what it was my first time seeing her before she came back as Lottie later and all that stuff like that. I just remember thinking, what a beautiful face this young girl had. I'm like, she is going to be a knockout someday. and it was something so soft about her makeup and it made her look so vulnerable. And I don't know. I was just like, wow, that's a pretty young woman. She is going to be gorgeous someday. I don't know what to tell you guys. I'm so busy staring at characters because I was that uninterested in what was happening. So bad. So bad. Oh, my word.
After arguing about deleting Selene, Stats abandons Wizard to do the job himself. Selene has taken advantage of the return of the power to set a trap, incapacitating Wizard and escaping back to the mall. With the arrival of Jack, Lex, and Gel, the Morats in high spirit and decide to hold a party. So yeah, panel, what did you make of Selene's escape plan, and how did you react to the reunions back at the mall?
This is what I'm talking about with two scenes that are juxtapositioned. One feels very grounded, and one feels like, are we in the same universe where these things have happened? So Selene's escape felt grounded. It felt real. You know, like, Stats was never really invested in kidnapping her in the first place. He's been stopping Wizard from hurting her. And so at this point, he's like, game over. We lost our leverage. Let's just forget it. We're not going to find Ram. I'm bored. I'm hungry. I don't want to hang out with you anymore. And if you're so dead set on doing this to her, you're going to have to do it on your own. I'm out. Okay. And he leaves. And Wizard's just like, and the fact that Wizard is determined to do it anyway, I think that says something about who he is as a person. He is determined to go in there and kill Selene, you know? Mm-hmm. So Selene, you know, playing the damsel, begging for her life, and then I actually like the way it's choreographed, the stunt. It's very clear what's happened, the way she smartly makes sure she shuts the door so that he has to open it again. And it's like, but I was left going, did Selene just murk that guy? Like, props to her if she did. Like, all the rainbows in the sky for Selene for just going for it and not being worried. And she doesn't check if he's breathing. She has no guilt. I'm like, you go, girl. Right. But I was like, oh, I think Selene just got a body count.
Yes, she did. No, it's the reason. When she does that quip at him, he is actually dead.
Like, she just took someone out, hit a one-liner, and walked out with the building exploding behind her. Power to Selene. But that's a very grounded scene, okay? And then you get to the mall, and it does not feel like it's in the same universe. Like, I mean, it makes sense that they're happy to see Selene. Obviously, she's been missing and, you know, Pride's been on the street looking her and May's been on the street looking for Pride and, you know, they're happy to see her. But there's just something about it that feels off, as if they've forgotten that complex emotions can exist. And
I was just going to say, I'm not sure that you would immediately go, let's have a party. I think you would want a debrief. Where were you kept? How many people were there? Was there anyone else there? Was
Who took there? You? Right.
Yeah, who took you? Yeah. Not, Selene's back. Let's have a party. It's like, no, babe, this is not the time.
Like, you guys weren't that worried about the fact that Selene was taken and kidnapped. Even the people who've been through kidnappings were not that concerned with her being gone. So why on earth start a party that she's back?
I do believe it's crazy they don't ask her any questions. Like, oh my gosh, how did you get away, sweetheart? Who did this to you? Because they could still be out there and might do it to other mall rats or whatever. Like, there's no concern about the fact that she's back because she was kidnapped. Wouldn't you want to know who the threat was, how she got away from the threat? Celine doesn't seem in any way traumatized, like, that she's been held captive and had to murk someone to get away.
they're acting like she's coming back from the guy in spa day.
Right. Yeah. It's like the tone is so weird. There's not even like, I expect relief. Like, oh my goodness, Celine, you're okay. Did Pride find you? Like, how are you back? Just no, it's just like, hey girl, you made it. Oh my gosh, we should celebrate. And it's like, what? Wait a minute, you guys.
Yeah, but the energy was way off even before Celine came in.
Yeah, it.
I mean, while I love that little moment between Jack and Trudy, Jack never liked her that much. The level of, oh my god, you're here, is...
Yeah, but isn't that because Trudy's fallen in love with Jay and she's really happy? That's how I read it anyway.
or she's been day drinking after their evening.
Yeah, I read it. I read the Jack and Trudy moment as, well, Jack was mad at her last time, remember? Mm-hmm. He was angry with her. But he didn't, he's past that now. He's not angry, but he doesn't expect her to be thrilled to see him because the last time they were alone, he said some pretty harsh things to her and made it very clear, like, you know, screw you. All right. He didn't see her in season 4, you know, so he is relieved when she's happy to see him. Like Trudy's joy, she's over the top, but she's over the top in this whole scene entirely. I told you, toxic positivity is her coping mechanism, and I don't know why they're going so hard with it. There are people, I'm not saying it's unrealistic that she's this way, but it is jarring to watch her be this way, given everything that's going on. And I can only say, like, if I were a writer, what my reasons would be for writing Trudy this way would be that the worse things get, the more tense they get, the more desperate she is to lean into anything positive, because she's burying all of the other feelings beneath it. And it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And it does with Trudy. But I can't say they put that kind of thought into it. I'm just saying, like, that's how, if I were writing it that way, that's what would be behind my process. Like, there's a psychological reason for why Trudy really seems like she is cracked out of her mind, happy. Like, she's on something. And it would be like, because she's trying to cope with the fact that things keep getting worse, you know what I mean? Or something like that.
Yeah.
But I figured Jack was just happy that she was happy to see him. He even says, I didn't expect that. You know, I did not expect her to be like, wow, you know, and he's thrilled to be home. It's a very different homecoming. Remember the last homecoming, the last couple of homecomings, you know, the first one from The Chosen was awful. Mm-hmm. And then the second one, you know, Amber was incredibly warm, but things were still weird at the mall. Mm-hmm. And this time things are actually pretty good. And Trudy, good Lord. But yeah, the whole tone in the mall is just weird, especially after we just watched Celine kill a guy. And again, I'm glad she did, but the mall just feels like a surrealism. It's like a surreal dream, the way the mood is.
I also clocked how many times Celine mentioned that she'd rescued herself. I didn't get myself out of that situation and things like that. It's like, yeah, you can be more passive aggressive, Celine. They deserve it.
Yeah, it's very odd.
She's like, I'm a damsel. I'm in distress. I'll manage.
I'm my own damn hero, you know? but yeah, it's so off. You know, again, she waltzes in like she wasn't just escaped. She waltzes in like she didn't just escape a kidnapping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She waltzes in as though, oh my gosh, you guys, I've been lost for days. I'm so glad I found them all. Thank goodness, you know. But it's like, no, Celine, you were held captive with two people threatening to kill you the whole time. you know, and you're just, this is a weird reaction to the fact that you had to end someone's life to escape and save your own. And everybody just being completely unconcerned about how that happened and where the kidnappers are and
life in a mall.
And it gets even worse because she's like, oh, when Pride comes back, I'm going to give him a piece of my mind, kind of thing. Like, that's
for making me wait. I'm like, yeah. You've learned that the reason he's not here is because he's out in the city, been searching for you. And instead of being like, oh my gosh, my poor baby, you know what I mean? Like, is there any way we can let him know I'm home? Is there any way we can get word to him? You know, does anyone know where he last was? She's just waiting for,
yeah.
How would he know you're home, Celine? How would he get, did you set the back signal up in the sky and he sees it and realizes you've made it back? Like, these are weird reactions to what's happening. She's just like, you know, I'm sure he'll be home any minute. It's like, why? He still thinks you're missing. He's sleeping in the street searching for you and you show zero concern. Just a playful, he better get his butt back here. I can't believe he can't stand me up. Like, Celine, you were kidnapped. And he thought you were going to die. He was trying to save you. How would he know you're home?
I'm going to dance him to death.
He's
already missing. Dead.
These lines. I don't.
He could be in danger because he's out there searching for you right now. Like, come on. This is such a weird reaction.
But the whole thing was weird.
Yeah,
I don't even mind that they want to celebrate something. Fine. But can we just acknowledge what's actually happening around here? I just harken back to Trudy's return in season 2 and how well they did the myriad of emotions everyone would be feeling in that moment that she comes home. Even the fact that Trudy starts crying once she's come home because she's been through an ordeal and it's not over yet, you know? And just the way everyone reacts to her coming home. They still like celebrate Trudy coming home, but it felt grounded, you know, an acknowledgement that they never thought they were going to see her again. And they didn't know what was happening to her. And like they had questions. They had questions.
How on earth did you escape?
Yeah, how did you and a baby get away from this cult that kidnapped you, you know? And the writing found excuses so that Trudy wouldn't have to explain herself, you know? But nobody has any questions for Celine, despite knowing exactly what was going down.
Yeah, but they also barely acknowledged that she was taken anyway.
Yeah. They didn't. They knew she's been kidnapped and held by 2 technos. And they were just like, I guess Pride will find her. Like, they didn't care. So, again, I agree. Why do they want to celebrate her coming back?
Yeah.
I don't get you guys. Yeah, but the mall feels like a fever dream. We had a really grounded scene leaning into it, and then everybody is cracked out and just weird. It's like a creepy children's show that you once saw when you were 5 and home, sick with the chicken pox, and yet you never found it again, and you try to tell people about it, but like nobody knows what you're talking about, and you're like, I know that thing existed. I saw it, okay? My TV wasn't haunted. It existed, okay? Like, it seems like the setup for a horror movie. It's so weird.
Yeah, meanwhile, Trudy and Jay flirt after their evening together, but the specter of Amber looms over them. Trudy visits Amber and attempts to gauge her feelings about Jay, again, and to push the two of them together.
Oh yeah, that's right, you had dinner with him last night. How'd it go?
He talked about you the whole time.
Oh?
So, with Ebony gone, there's nothing to keep you guys apart.
Look, even if I did feel that way about him, there'd always be Bray between us.
Amber, Bray's gone, and Jay didn't know that would happen.
I can't feel anything for him, not with what happened to Bray. What would I tell our son?
Amber, Jay isn't at fault.
Yeah, right. But would Bray understand?
Your feelings for Jay?
Oh, Trudy, I don't know what I feel. All I know is that Jay and I, it'll never happen.
but is secretly pleased when Amber confirms that nothing can happen between them. So yeah, just kind of briefly, what did you think of Trudy's approach here?
Okay. This is one of those things where I think the dialogue is fine, but the way it's delivered is the most awkward and bizarre conversation happening. And it's on both ends, both Trudy and Amber. The way they're delivering their lines feels uncanny, is the only word I can keep using, even though the words they're saying are fine.
Even if you go back, though, to the Trudy J thing, that is really uncomfortable, because there's a moment mm-hmm. when they're having a conversation and it seems like Trudy is leading up to telling him how she feels, or that mm-hmm. she's going to try and kiss him or something. And then I don't know whether he knows that's what she's going to do, but he like rows all the way back on that. Mm-hmm. But before then, he's like saying, you're wonderful, that cooking last night. And I'm just like, I'm going to do it again. Right? Yeah. It's just grim. The whole scene is grim. She's meant to be chipper and carefree and loving and all the things that Amber and Ebony aren't. And she's meant to be like, oh, this is a real woman. This is the one. You know, because that's how Jay, I think, in his head, he slots these women into, like, Ebony, she's in the beginning, she was all he thought about. Now he can't stand her. Amber, he's been obsessed with her the entire time, but sooner or later he'll go off her as well. And now Trudy's just in the long line of these women that he becomes obsessed with for a short period of time.
And yet he responds. Yeah, but that's like, he responds to her, like, you can see her coming closer to him, and he responds like, yeah, no, I have to go wash my hair.
Yeah, like
with his whole, yeah, I must have had too much alcohol last night, and yeah, a bit of a headache sort of thing. It's
like the Jay and Trudy thing could have actually been a cute moment if it was part of their actual genuine love story.
Yeah,
you know, like if they were Endgame, this would be a very precious moment of two people recognizing an attraction, recognizing mm-hmm. like for Jay recognizing like, oh, I've been so obsessed with this other girl, but here is one who actually makes me feel good when I'm with her and feel relaxed and not stressed, and realizing I genuinely enjoyed my time with her. I want her to know that, you know, and Trudy gauging, but also feeling guilty. She's enjoying her time with him too. She's enjoying hearing that he liked spending time with her. And then immediately the guilt kicks in, because Trudy mm-hmm. clearly does not value herself the way she values, you know, Amber. And in her eyes, Amber is the top prize. Everybody always wants Amber. Why would they ever pick Trudy? She's used to being the quote unquote ugly friend. Okay. The undesirable mm-hmm. one. And so the minute she allows herself to feel good about this guy, as her burgeoning feelings for him are coming, she immediately remembers, wait, no, there's a better option for him. And that's who he wants. And he's made that clear. That's who he wants. And it would be wrong of me to step in there because I don't deserve nice things. So again, I feel like the dialogue is great, and this would be a great scene if they were Endgame, you know. It's awkward, and that's okay. It's allowed to be awkward. They're two teenagers dancing around these new feelings they're having. Then Trudy, you know, he kind of pushes it. It's not like she's doing it all by herself. He is flirting just as hard with her and pushing the conversation towards letting her know, I really liked that time with you. He's not holding back, you know, and so she leans into it. And then they both remember themselves, like, no, you know what I mean? I'm supposed to like this other person. And, you know, it's okay for him to be conflicted. All of that, it's fine. Yeah. Again, it sucks. It sucks in hindsight because we know where this is going. But this is where the thing is, what we know about Jay, and Tamsin mentioned it, as he slots these girls into these places, they are replaceable to him.
Yeah.
Because all Jay wants from a woman is validation.
Yes.
Like, yeah. That's literally all he wants. You know, he takes from them everything because it makes him feel important. He gives, like, almost nothing back, you know. And as you said, he was obsessed with Ebony, you know. But yeah. Did he give Ebony anything? It was Ebony doing the giving. Ebony jumping over the hurdles, proving everything, and finally giving up everything to be with him. And then that was enough. He found something else to be obsessed with. He'd gotten so much validation from her. There was literally nothing else she could have given him, and now he's bored. He wants validation from Amber. He's so upset that Amber doesn't want to be with him because he's lost that validation. His attraction to Trudy is also based in the fact that she validates him. She's constantly telling him he's not to blame, he's not a bad person, he's wonderful, he deserves great things, on and on. And she'd do anything to put a smile on his face. And that's what he's attracted to. That's what he's falling for in this moment, that she's so much easier. He doesn't have to do anything to seem like a great guy to her. She makes him feel wonderful, and he has to put zero effort in. That's what he's attracted to. That's what he's falling for in this moment. That's what he's like, oh, wow, this is hot, that this girl is would just spend hours telling me how wonderful I am. That's why he's like, I really enjoyed my time with you. Of course you did. She was singing your praises the whole time. Like, why wouldn't you enjoy your time with her? When this girl seeks you out every time you're pouting to make you feel better, you know, that, and that's what makes the whole thing just sad and ugh, you know, because we know where this goes and we know what Jay is and we know the role poor Trudy is going to play in this.
It's depressing
because it's a moment of genuine attraction. The difference is that Trudy is actually attracted to him. She actually thinks he's a great guy, but doesn't think she's worthy of a great guy, especially when that great guy has already expressed interest for her way better friend who's so perfect, you know. And he's feeling genuine attraction, but what he's attracted to is the fact that she makes him feel amazing about himself.
I don't actually think that Jay's ever had a genuine attraction to a woman that wasn't like this. I think even, you know, with his dead girlfriend, I bet it was just like this, but in a different way. I bet they've all been like this and they'll all be like this. And he kind of pedestals them as well, doesn't he?
Well, you know, it is common for narcissists, and I don't know if he is one. I'm, you know, this is just armchair psychology. But if he were a narcissist, it would make sense, because something they do, and we saw this in Celine too, when you're their favorite person in the world, you can do no wrong. But when you've let them down or disappointed them or just done something they don't like, you are, it goes the extreme opposite. You're the worst person who ever existed. And it's just, you know, that's, he can go from, I'm obsessed with this woman, she's all I can think about, I can't do anything else, to she means nothing to him with the flip of a switch. And again, both scenes, I think they're directed well. Camera work looks nice. You know, lighting is great. But, and I, again, I like the dialogue. I like what is being said. I get what's being said. I understand what is happening in the scene. You know, Trudy feeling out Amber, because she has just, she's realizing she likes Jay, but she's a girl's girl. She's not going to go after this guy if Amber wants him and she knows he wants Amber. You know, she doesn't want to be that person, and she's trying to get a read. And of course she feels relieved that if Amber doesn't want him, maybe there's a chance for me. But she'd never do it if Amber expressed interest. She wouldn't do that to her best friend, you know. And then she's with Jay and like, feeling him out. Could he see somebody outside of Amber because she's great? Like, she's reminding him in the conversation. I mean, Amber's awesome. She's amazing. You know, like, could he possibly like another girl outside? Like, the way Trudy lays things out for Amber, like, there's nothing stopping you from getting with him. She needs to make sure that Amber not wanting Jay is simply because Amber doesn't want Jay, not because she thinks there's other things in the way. So she's reminding her, he and Ebony are over. He's not into her. He says it was over before it was over. On and on. She's making sure Amber knows the runway is clear if you want him. So do you want him? And Amber reaffirms, no, I don't. She even asks, like, how'd you guys' dinner go? Like, Amber is showing such disinterest and giving reason for it. No wonder Trudy looks relieved. Like, oh, so I could set my plane down this runway? Possibly? Like, I could have something? So the dialogue's great. But the way these guys are talking to each other feels so unnatural. It's weird. Why were they directed to talk to each other this way? I'm sorry about that rant, you guys. I spent years thinking about Trudy, Jay, Amber, like, and how the story could have gone, and how it could have, even if it went the way it went, where, you know, he and Trudy don't work out and he ends up with Amber, it still could have worked, you know. But so I do apologize for just blah, 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 blah.
It was an enjoyable rant.
So nice to meet Tamsin.
Well, I enjoyed it because I think we all kind of feel the same, don't we, really? There is potential in this relationship. It would have been interesting, but it's one of those really frustrating things where they're using Trudy as a stalking horse for Jay and Amber, right? Mm-hmm. She's a placeholder until the preferred couple get together, and then she'll be discarded. And it's frustrating because, like you say, you cannot not see it for what it is. And so you don't really feel anything about this other than incredibly sorry for Trudy.
You just get the ick watching it. You're like, ah! Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would you want me to do my comedy retching again?
Trust me. I made sure to watch this halfway through the day so I wouldn't ruin my appetite for dinner.
And you're just always reminded, why is this what they chose to do, especially to Trudy? What purpose did this serve that couldn't have been done without involving her? I mean, there's a way to do this, and they already did it. They've already proven there's a way to do this, and they did it with Lex, Tyson, and Alice. You don't come out of that hating any of those characters. Your heart is broken for all three of them. You don't hate Lex and Tyson for falling in love and Alice getting her heart broken. You know, they took their time, and nobody betrayed anybody in the sense that, oh, you know, Lex led Alice on and, you know, he cheated on her with Tyson. None of that happened. And it's like so
different, though.
But that's what I'm saying. They have proven this can be done in a tasteful way that makes you feel empathy for all the characters involved. And they decided to just, no, we don't want a thoughtful love triangle at all. Not at all. Or, I mean, I suppose it's not really is that a love triangle? Whatever. It doesn't matter. No, point is they could have, they know they can do thoughtful ones. And in season 5, they said, oh no. Absolutely not. No thoughtfulness. We don't care.
And it's crazy as well. I think the most crazy thing about that is that this is Amber and Trudy, right? Who are arguably two of the most, if not the most important, some of the most important characters in the tribe. So this should get the same level of writing that Tyson, mm-hmm. Lex, and Alice got. But they don't. And that just shows you nobody cares anymore.
No.
Nope.
Like, these are not side characters, as you said. These are primary characters. And you have spent years building the friendship between these young women.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what. I will keep coming back to that. I don't know what they were thinking.
Were they thinking?
Like, what writer in their right mind thought this was good in anyway, thought this was good storytelling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Trudy's approach made sense. Even knowing where this goes, I respect her, you know, making sure that the ground was clear before she put her foot on it. Like, she's showing genuine respect and maturity for the situation and isn't going, even if she wanted him, if Amber said, I want him, she would just back off. She would swallow those feelings. Yep. And I do think it's so heartbreaking to hear Trudy talk about herself and realize how little she thinks of herself in comparison to Amber, and wanting something but not believing she deserves to even have it, especially if there's, in her mind, a better option out there.
I don't like this, Java. It's scary. Ebony's going crazy, and I don't know what to do.
Do nothing. Just play along.
She's my sister, Java. Our sister. I know she's done bad things to us in the past, but I can't see her like that. I don't like using her. She needs help.
When did she ever do anything to help us? It's always been Ebony first and last.
But I...
Now she wants to be first again, with the one symbol that can take her there. Zoot. But the difference is, Siva, this time when she gets to the top, we'll be right alongside her, pulling the strings.
And Siva reluctantly goes through with Ebony's sham wedding to Zoot. So yeah, well, what would you make of Siva's reservations and what is happening here between the sisters?
I'm glad someone has reservations about this. I'm thinking, why on earth are we allowing her to believe this kind of craziness?
I'm going to be straight. This is one of the only times that Java's motivations make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if she feels that, you know, Ebony will always rise to the top, she's very good at doing that, and she thinks, like, well, but this time we'll be on top, but we're actually the ones controlling her. We're the ones, like, instead of being at her mercy, we're, like she said, we're pulling the strings. I'm like, that actually makes sense for Java, like, at least for her motivations of being on board with this. We know she doesn't like mm-hmm. her sister. She clearly doesn't feel any guilt for making her lose her mind. So, yeah, I was like, okay, that, fine, you know? She's ready. She's willing to ride this wave. And I also like that it's nice sneaky dialogue, because she's not giving away that she knows why Ebony is going crazy. She's not willing to express how evil she actually is to Siva.
Yeah.
She's acting like, I don't know why she's being this way, but I figure we can use this to our advantage. And I don't feel guilty about it. You know, we'll keep her out of too much trouble. We'll make sure she doesn't hurt herself, but we'll ride to the top with her because she always gets there. And this time we'll piggyback with her, man. You know, and again, I just thought like the dialogue works really well, expressing who these guys are and what they think and feel about what the frick is going on. And
because that's, I mean, I read that like you said, but I also think there's another element in this as well. So like, there's a triple con going on here, isn't there, on Siva? Because there's the con that Java is not telling Siva everything that's happening, i.e. she has already done this to Ebony, and that's why Ebony is being sued. And then she's told her, oh, we're just going to ride the lift all the way up to the top. We're going to go with Ebony. But that's not actually true. This is revenge. They're going to get to the top, but then Java's going to push Ebony off. And I think that's the ingredient that she's also holding back, which is all of this is about revenge. Because she has that moment where she says, why are we still here? Why don't we just leave? But she's never going to do that, is she? Because she wants to finish Ebony off. That's her story, isn't it? All of this, everything she's doing, including getting Ebony this power base, is just so she can push her off the mountain once they get to the top.
And it says so much about her, probably the most they've ever actually said about Java, that, okay, when we first meet her, she just wants Ebony dead. And she's willing to just kill her in an alleyway. Okay, that's what she wants to do. And they're stopped because Jay shows up. And they, you know, she's got the zapper, everything ready to just end Ebony right there. But at this point, she has reached a place where she has access to Ebony. She could just smother her in her sleep. Like, she could end her 10 times a day if that's all she wants to do. But as you said, there's more to her revenge now. Now, again, if we went with my canon, that this is because she was desperately in love with Ram, and this was just Ebony stealing her man and turning her man against her and ruining everything was the last straw. Now Java's like, no, I don't want you just to die. I want you to suffer. I want you to think you've achieved your goals, and then I want you to look me in the eyes while I push you off the cliff. Like, that is some hatred. Because again, if you just want her gone, you have access to her to easily make her gone.
Yeah.
But no, you want to help her achieve everything so you can take it from her while looking her in the face when you do it. You want her to know you're the one who did it, that you beat her.
Mm.
And I think that's the most insightful thing we've ever really learned about Java.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going to come back into play later on, isn't it? I mean, this is a story... Unlike a lot of these characters, Java, however unsatisfying her narrative actually is, it does have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, she does go on this road of revenge, and it does lead her to where she ends up in Liberty.
because she is so pleased watching Ebony like this. Like, you got Siva's expression. Siva's like, oh my gosh, this is so creepy and messed up and disturbing. I'm not comfortable with it. Even if I've had problems with our sister, like she says, she's like, she needs help, you know? And it just, you know, that's Siva at her core. She's not cruel by nature. You know, she has too much empathy to be cruel. She can be indifferent, but she's not cruel. And compared to Java, who is just like, this is so enjoyable watching my little sister lose her frickin' mind. Because she knows if Ebony was in her right mind, she would be like, oh, my, I did what? I'm sorry. What did I do? I married the imaginary ghost of my dead abusive boyfriend. Like, Ebony in her right mind would go nuts just thinking about that. And Java knows that.
But it's humiliating, isn't it?
It's so humiliating.
It's a humiliation. Yeah.
Java's like, you look so stupid. But I that wedding was full camp, you guys. It was so campy. And I don't know about you, but I don't ever need to see an image of Danny James leaning into a camera into my face for a kiss. I don't need that ever, ever again in my life.
Well, as I was saying, I think they put it together really quickly, because where did they find the dress and all those candles in that school? I mean, that dress, that is full goth, vampira, I'm getting married. It's perfect.
I know, where it's so well coordinated. I'm like, these are not random things you found in the Lost and Found. No.
No. And especially when you compare it to the dress that she married Ram in as well. I think they kind of bookend each other quite nicely. Yeah, it is. But it isn't as well, because we know Ebony is not in her right mind at this point. So it's also not Ebony either, but neither of those dresses.
It's Java's version of Ebony.
Yeah, I mean, yes, you're right there. It is Java's version of Ebony. Yeah, you're right. That's how she sees her, as this sort of demonic monster, really. But well, she can't.
apparently Java and Siva used to go to the same school, apparently. So clearly they've raided an old locker from an old classmate that was into this kind of clothes.
I don't believe for a second these clothes are anywhere in this school. The school hasn't been scavenged to within an inch of its life. So I'm with Tamsin. I don't know where they found those clothes. I might forgive the candles, because there were kids living there, okay? They likely had candles, things like that. But those clothes, I don't buy it. That well-coordinated outfit, no.
Yeah.
That's a Halloween costume. That's like a high-end Halloween costume you buy off Amazon, okay? I don't buy that they found those things lying around the school.
Laying in the costume department.
Like, no. That stuff was looted ages ago.
Yeah. The stuff from the drama department's always the first to go in things like this, right?
Yep. Especially in an apocalypse where fashion is key.
I will say, though, that if you ever need an event, like a fancy dress party or something, get Java and Siva on the blower, because they'll be able to get you a look that probably costs nothing and is delivered to your house immediately and looks really good as well.
Same day delivery.
Same hour.
Because, you know, they couldn't leave the school. They're on the run. You know, they're in hiding. So they couldn't just go off to find the sites. It's so silly. But, my word.
It's one of the most bonkers weddings we've ever seen, I think, in the drive. And we've had some crazy ones. We've had Lex and Zandra's, both their weddings were nuts, right? We had the people that were attacking. You know, we had, like, Trudy totally out of her mind officiating the Sandra Ryan Lex Tyson mashup wedding, right? We have seen some crazy weddings, but this is the top of the pile for me.
Yep.
It's up there with when the Guardian and Tyson got married.
I do think
at least bride and groom were both there.
Of all of the weddings, though, I feel like all of the others had an intentional tone. So when you take like Lex and Zandra's first wedding, it's meant to be farcical because he does not love her and she's in Delulu land and nobody believes in it. And of course it all goes wrong. And it's meant to be. It's meant to feel that way. Like she's a child playing pretend and she doesn't realize that, you know, and nobody's like, the only people excited are the girls, you know, because they get to dress up. And then their second wedding is actually more sincere, even though Lex still doesn't love her. We know how devoted Zandra actually is. And the group is actually supporting them and wanting to, you know, give them a great party, even if it's like, this isn't going to last, but we want to give our friends a good time and a lovely wedding, even if it's only for Zandra's sake, you know, and there's like a lot of dimension to what's going on. Ryan being in love and, you know, it's taken much more seriously. There's a deliberate tone, the tone to the double wedding in season two, same thing. You've got one couple that's sincere, even if nobody expects that one to work out. One couple that's a complete lie that other people actually genuinely believe in, you know, and how they juxtaposition. And of course, Trudy officiating is the layer on top of that cake of how messed up some of this actually is. The lies, the deceptions, you know, the betrayals, everything. Tyson and the Guardian's wedding, same thing. It's meant to be disturbing because it's not like she could consent to marrying this guy. She's captured by him. That's actually quite terrifying. You know, she's just trying to not die, right? And this one, though, doesn't feel like there's a deliberate tone to it. Like, I don't know what tone they're going for. If they were going for creepy, maybe you shouldn't have shown the point of view of them kissing. Like, that took me out of it immediately. Mm-hmm. It's just a weird, like, what tone are you going for? Are we supposed to be creeped out? Are we supposed to be uneasy? Are we supposed to be laughing? Like, what are we supposed to be feeling in this wedding? I'm just glad we didn't have to see Pride and Celine's wedding, to be honest.
Gawky matching. Oh my God. They're just like...
At least they saved us from that.
And just like Travis and Taylor, their vows have been 20 minutes each.
But then again, they still haven't realized that they were ever going to do that. I guarantee they never actually thought that that was something that would have been a possibility. They just pulled it out of their butts later to have Celine, as you said, to eulogize the relationship and what we lost by having her say, he asked me to marry. Like, no, he didn't. I don't believe you. So they haven't thought of that yet. It hasn't come up yet.
Yeah, speaking of Celine, Celine is excited to see Pride again, but May soon bursts her bubble by revealing to everyone that he is dead.
It's not true. Tell me it's not true.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I saw it happen.
Did he suffer?
No. It was quick.
Did he say anything? Did he say anything, May? Anything at all?
Celine wants to know all the details, but May keeps his message to herself, denying that he said anything before he died. So yeah, how did you react to the revelation of Pride's death and May's deceit here?
I feel like May is the only person who understands the level of drama that we require for this. I love that she kept that piece of information back to herself. And I feel like that is a season one, season two moment that we would have got, where we've got this character, they know this thing, they can feel it, and then it eats them from the inside out, which is what is going to happen with May. And that is the kind of drama that I absolutely love, and that the tribe used to be really capable of giving us. So thank you, May. Thank God he's still dead. I'm glad he's still dead. The witch is still dead, right?
Well, it would have been horrible if they just came with the reveal that he was still alive and he was just, you know, in a coma or stunned.
He was hanging on just memory-wise until he saw her face. Oh, God.
And this scene adds to the whiplash of this episode because this is a grounded scene. This scene is on par with Celine ending someone's life to save her own and escape. Okay? It's gritty. It's kind of ugly. And it feels very real and settled into this world. I love the shot of her just in Trudy's arms and crying and Trudy just trying to comfort her. Even the way Trudy delivers her lines when she asks, did he suffer? It's softly. Mm-hmm. It's not exaggerated. You know, the way they're talking feels real, you know, and even the way May lies, all of it, it's not exaggerated. And I'm and like, even the lighting in the scene is really gorgeous. I'm sorry. I'm just like, it's whiplash because the other scenes we've gotten have been just so off kilter and weird and tonally off. And yet now we've got a grounded scene that makes sense. And it's actually like makes you feel something. And I agree. I love this version of May's deceit. It's like that's real deceit. That's how people, you know, who are hurt people, you know. And I actually prefer this lie to the one she'll tell later.
Mm-hmm.
Because this one is like very relatable.
Yeah.
In the sense that if she can't admit to herself and say it out loud that in his last moments while he was looking at her, his message was tell Celine I love her. If she can't face that, she just doesn't say it out loud. And it's like, I can at least understand that rather than later to hurt Celine to say he confessed love to me. Like, that's just going over the top to destroy someone's life. But you didn't need to do that, May, you know? Like, this is a relatable kind of deceit that I think all of us at some point have exercised in some way. A lie of omission because it hurts us or we, you know what I mean? And I agree. That kind of drama, I'm on board with. Like, that is so, it's like, oh, we know what his last words are. But it hurts May so much to have to admit that she'd rather just be like, he didn't say anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And how hurtful, we know how much that hurts Celine, you know? And I love this scene. But it's like, in this episode, it doesn't fit. Like, what was the rest of this episode?
There's such a contrast, and I'm still wondering which one was directed badly and which one wasn't directed at all, because this scene feels more real. This feels more like something these actors would do versus the overly hyper happy. Ugh.
And I like the fact that it was Trudy who was comforting Celine, and that Trudy was the one that asked, you know, did he suffer?
And not Amber.
I like that. Well,
I mean, that's her residential role to make everybody else feel better.
Yeah, fair. Amber isn't there.
Like, I mean, Trudy's role is she's just a designator. I'll make you feel good and just swallow down my pain all the time. Anytime I express pain, people will treat me like I'm insufferable. But if you've got pain, I'll absorb it for you. That is what Trudy's been turned into.
Mm-hmm.
But in this scene, it's very beautiful. I like the body language of the way she is caring for Celine and looking after her. And it's a nice reflection of where their friendship has been and the times it has been sincere and the way they've cared for each other through the different phases of their relationship. And I just think, again, I just keep hearing Antonia say so softly, did he suffer, you know? Mm-hmm. And like she's searching for any form of comfort for her friend.
It's such a sad moment as well, you know. I mean, it's really, you do feel for Celine in this moment because she's come through all that and all she wants to do is see Bride. And it's the last thing that she ever expected. It has been ripped away from her. Yeah. And she will never get to see him or say goodbye to him or for him to know that she made it out or any of that. And she, like, to be denied his last words, I mean, she doesn't know that that's what's happened, but you do feel sorry for her, whatever you think of her.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sad moment for a character that has always been really kind of pathetic.
I agree. Like, I mean, bless her heart for loving that guy, but she did. She loved him. So it's heartbreaking for her in her state of mind now because she has. It's like Alice losing Ned, you know, he wasn't good enough for you, but she loved him. He was the one person who loved her and was promising to give her a great life. And she lost him in an incredibly cruel way, you know, and at least this time, you know, other people are acting like they care that he died. Mm-hmm. Like, poor Alice, nobody gave a crap. She's the only one who is just, like, in agony over it, you know? Everyone else is like, this is awkward.
I'm kind of glad that Celine got to have this moment without Amber present. So we didn't have to get the whole, oh, but you've known him so long and poor Amber sort of crap.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. They would have found a way to ruin it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Amber's already had her awful moment of learning the same horrible news.
Yeah.
So I am glad that they
didn't.
They don't rehash that. Mm-hmm. Because, one, Amber doesn't need that. She's been through enough, okay? Mm-hmm. I am glad that this is just a quiet moment for Celine and a friend who's been there since the start. And I mean, I just like the mirror image. I mean, from the moment mm-hmm. Trudy came in the mall, Celine was taking care of her, you know? Yeah. And like when Trudy came back from, you know, like when Brady's taken away and she's hysterical, it's Celine taking care of her, mm-hmm. watching over her, you know, and just on and on. And so I do just like that mirror image of Trudy giving her that same care. That's how far the relationship has come. But poor Trudy is always stuck in this position, you know.
Yeah.
Of she's so sincere in giving her care to other people, but she rarely ever gets to express pain for the same loss.
I think she's been trapped in that eternal mum role, though, hasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, she's kind of become everybody's mum. Well, I know Amber's everybody's mum mentally, but Trudy kind of feels that, like, Amber's not a touchy-feely. This version of Amber we've got is not touchy-feely. It used to be in the past, but not now, right? Whereas Trudy is, she will hold you. She will make space to hear what you've got to say. She has that, she kind of fills that space. And she has taken on that role of being, whether they know it or not, or whether she knows it or not, everybody's mom, basically, emotionally.
Well, Trudy's had to learn the hard way that when she expresses her hurts and her pains, they are dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like her mom a lot of the time, isn't it?
She's taking care of everyone the way she would have loved to be taken care of.
And she thinks she deserves that. Because as she said to Jay, he's like, you're such a nice person. She's like, yeah, I know. I'm such a nice person. I wasn't always.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she believes she deserves to be relegated. Like, this is what she mm-hmm. owes the world for her missteps as a child.
I mean, you could also see another side, though, that she's trying to say to him, look, I know what it's like. I've been in your place.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I do get that, but it's
yeah.
obviously the way Trudy views herself.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's no longer just a theory that we have. This is, Trudy does see herself as someone
yeah.
who
yeah.
is relegated to take whatever she can get because she doesn't deserve much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because she messed up in the past and wasn't always easy to get along with and was an emotional young woman who gave birth during the apocalypse when she was 14. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. she thinks she deserves to be second place and a background character and a support for everyone else to make up for that forever.
Yeah. And the narrative agrees with her.
Yeah, absolutely.
The narrative, they agree with her. They never, ever, ever contradict that.
Anytime Trudy is in pain, it's a hassle for the other characters to calm her and be there for her. And they will have her rejecting their care or their help. And they just treat her like, oh, you know, she's just not the kind of person you can comfort. But the mirror image is that when anyone else is suffering, Trudy is boom on it. Like, it's just bizarre. It's a bizarre choice. Mm-hmm. To write a character this way. But I think this is a lovely scene, but it just doesn't fit in this episode because it's tonally off. And it's like the one good scene. And it's in this weird ass episode.
That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. Blaming Ebony for Java's escape and the Zoot rumors, Mega enlists Amber's help to expose the Zoot lie on CityNet. Having made sure the whole city will be watching, the broadcast is then interrupted by Zoot himself, in reality Daryl, who announces to the city that he is back. So yeah, panel, what did you make of Mega's use of Amber and the theatricality of the broadcast?
I just want to circle back to something quickly, which is Celine coming in to the conversation between Mega, Jay and Amber. And I love how Celine is now the Liz Truss of the tribe. Everyone's forgotten that she used to be the city leader. And Amber looks at her like, hi, honey, can I get you anything? As if, you know, Celine should not be involved in this conversation at all. I just, well done, writers. Well done. I mean,
you know, a new season allows you to retcon things, and they retcon Celine right out of that position.
It's like everyone realized that, yeah, of course Celine won, Ram wanted her to. You know, it was just for fun and giggles.
Amber's back now full time, so we don't need real Celine leaders anymore. Yeah. And I think it feeds into something. I think you might have said, Liz, or you might have said, Sabine, I'm not sure who said it, but it feeds back into something that's been said in the podcast before, which is this idea that is unearned of Amber having this status in the city, which she doesn't actually have.
She wasn't there for the whole of season two. In season three, she magically gets the status that of, oh, that great mole rat leader that gave us this, this, and this, which was more Danny's part than hers, anyways.
Yeah.
To be fair, there is only one character who always has the speeches with the city, and that is Amber. She's always calming down the crowd. She's always being the one to be the figurehead. So it makes sense that Amber would speak to the city here again, just like she tried to do right when Riff Ram back in season four.
I think it makes sense in what Mega's plan is and the people who are involved. Like, I agree. I understand what you guys are saying, that the narrative has put Amber in a place that in many ways she has not earned. And we've seen it time and time again. But here, I do think it makes sense given who's involved. Mega has already pegged Amber as the one who is keeping these guys together. She is the one they all look to. Now, if they were all looking to Celine, he would have made Celine his puppet. Straight up. That's what he would have done. But he's looking at the picture of this group of misfits, these kids, and he's like, they all look to her. Okay, so whether she's city leader or whatever, people do listen to her. People respond to her. And Jay is obsessed with her. I can use her. You know, so I'm like, this makes sense given who's involved, regardless of how the narrative has treated Amber in the past in the show. You know, and
she's
what he has seen. Right. What he has seen is that people respond to Amber. They mobilized behind her to take out Ram. She was able to get people on board to do this. It wasn't Celine doing it, despite her being city leader. It was Amber. So I get why Mega's like, yeah, she's my puppet. She's the one. People respond to her. People listen to her. He doesn't give a crap about her history in the city. Just what will work.
And she was the one who basically broke into the other broadcast. In season four, or at least who attempted to.
I love the way Mega calculated this. Honestly, I love a lot about Mega's plan, just in general. you know, the way he slides out these suggestions and gets people to do the thing that will be their downfall and they never see it coming. I also like the fact that the way he creates an enemy through Ebony, I'm going to actually give him a lot of pointers. It's not just that he creates an enemy out of Ebony and is like, oh, that's such a villainous thing to do, da 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 da. But I think there's something people miss about this plan. It's that if Mega's goal is order, which we learn it is, he wants to create a nice, neat police state where everything makes sense and everybody works and everyone contributes to society. And even if the only reason they're there is because they're afraid of what's outside the walls, he can have his orderly society. You got to create an enemy. But it's not that he just creates an enemy. He taps into what would probably happen regardless. If he never went after Ebony and made her go crazy, we all know for a fact Ebony would try to still topple whatever regime built itself up. We know her. We know her history. There's no way she's going to just allow someone else to be on top. We know that. We also know that the city is full of crazy kids who will not accept order at all. Just because. And I actually think he should be applauded for, let's just weed out the troublemakers now. They're always going to rally around some insane cause. Let me get them out of the way by creating this insane cause. Because think about it. You don't have to join what Ebony's going to create. Okay? You don't have to have anything to do with it. But guess who would? The people who are always going to be a problem for the society he wants to create in the first place. So why not weed them out early?
I disagree with that heavily.
I'm just saying, I think that's brilliant.
I think he's making more problems than there actually were. I honestly think he didn't need to make the city go as crazy as it did. The order was already pretty much there. The people were pacified with with the technology in reality space. He created more of a problem than he needed to fix.
Yeah, but with Ebony out there...
Ebony would have been... If he hadn't fried her brain, Ebony would have just been where Ebony Uji is. One person. Like, he created this whole city... I really doubt. He created more of an issue, basically, than what there already was. Because the city was pretty much docile at this point.
With how much
they were all on hooked on reality space.
Yeah, but with how much he and Java apparently discuss things with his plan to drive Ebony insane, I wonder how much of this is what my sister's like, and this is what she's definitely going to do if we don't take her out, Java told him.
That's the thing, they could have just taken Ebony out. He created this chaos on purpose for a reason.
He needed an enemy.
But he didn't need to do it, though. That's the whole problem. He didn't need to create all this chaos.
The best way to get on top. People would argue that you do need an enemy.
They were on top already.
I'm not
buying it. Sorry, I'm not buying it.
They're on top, but...
They're on top.
Creating a mutual enemy for him and a mole rat is a perfect way... pacify the mole rats into thinking you're not the bad guy.
They already did, though. Come on. At this point, Mega had rescued Brady. He'd set everything up. He'd followed all Jay's orders. There was no big suspicion on Mega. Everything was perfect. The city was hooked on reality space. The power was going to be put back on. There was no need to go this extra step and create this chaos.
I guess the thing, though, is what happens next. Because I guess the thing is that, in a way, Mega kind of needs to move the dial, doesn't he? Because it's fine as it is, and I agree with you. Everything is kind of in place, but he's not going to want to be in that position with the mole rats forever, is he? So is he creating straw people for them to kind of chase around after, and so that they don't know what's really going on?
Letting this unstable element like Ebony out loose, that was just miscalculation. The biggest miscalculation you could ever do for somebody who's miscalculating.
I think his miscalculation was thinking that Java would set Ebony loose like this. I think he assumed he would have Ebony in his pocket under his guidance.
Way he fried her brain with the reality space, no, I can't buy that.
Well,
this
remember,
was a tightly controlled element of Ebony.
He's not the one who was frying her brain to the point. It was Java doing it, though.
Yeah, but he knew that happened.
I know, but what I'm saying is he's, like, we'll see later, there'll be a scene between them when he'll find out that Java is dosing Ebony way more than she should. And he's like, what are you doing? Like, she's actually taking it further than she needs to, which of course is why Ebony becomes even more unstable and harder to predict and harder to control. I think Java is the element he was not considering, because of course she's more into the sadistic revenge of torturing her sister rather than the plan, you know. But I just think this is a worthy argument to continue as the season goes on. And I'm looking forward to it.
I really love Mega. I think he's very calculating and smart, but in this issue, I really think it doesn't work for me.
Well, we know he has a blind spot, which will later be shown to us when it comes to interpersonal relationships and how he thinks people will respond to certain things. And you could argue that his blind spot here is that he doesn't realize how far Java's willing to take the revenge.
But I don't agree that if he didn't do what he did, that the city would have stayed peaceful and they would have stayed on top. This city has proven absolutely not. Like, the crazies would have come out and found a way to destroy whatever peace these guys tried to create.
Yeah, and so you've you've got those VR headsets floating around as well. You've already got people outside going, you know, give us our VR headsets. Mm-hmm. So it would only be a matter of time before, like you say, some crazy got organized and was like, we demand our VR headsets back, you know?
They should have just had it in from the start. They should not have taken it back.
Yeah, but I guess if they didn't do that, it would have all gone absolutely...
How do you mean?
Well, he never wanted to take them back. Remember, it was the Mallrats mm-hmm. who demanded that the headsets be collected, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, he probably would have been like, yeah, let them rot their brains. And if they want access to that, they have to work or something like Ram did or whatever. But again, I think this is going to be interesting to hash out and debate back and forth. I still like the idea that it's like, you know what, if these people are going to be crazy, let's localize them and centralize them around something that he feels he will be able to control. But again, as Samson said, Mega, he's good at order, but he's not good at people. And where in mm-hmm. some places he can predict what people are going to do, because he doesn't know how to human, he misses the unpredictability of humans. You know, and they're only going to do what you think they're going to do so far. You know, there are always going to be wild cards you did not consider, you know. I kind of love the way he set these guys up for this. I wish Bray could have seen Daryl and been immediately, that's not my brother. Like, mm-hmm. I can forgive most of these characters for not realizing Daryl's not Zoot, because most of them, like, saw him maybe once or twice, you know, with makeup on his face all the time. Even in posters, he's caked in makeup. They didn't know him. Bray and Trudy are the only ones who really know, Ebony too, know what this man's face looks like. Like, they spent intimate time with him. Bray would know immediately, that's not my brother. Like, the minute he saw Daryl, he'd be like, that's not Martin. Like, I don't know who that is. It's a nice lookalike, but it's not him. You know, I remember seeing this and thinking they couldn't find a better lookalike to be his clone. But then I had to remember, well, most people actually wouldn't have spent much time or seen Zoot's face.
Nope.
To be able to recognize off the bat, that's not him.
Yeah, and we even have that scene, don't we, to kind of back that up later on. Well, earlier on, we have Gail talking about the Mallrats and what she knew about the Mallrats as a mode. Mm-hmm. So if you take it, there are going to be loads of people, like you say, who have only heard of Zoot, don't know what Zoot looks like, might even think Zoot is the Guardian, you know, looks like the Guardian. Yeah, because we are in the epicenter of this Zoot explosion, but around the periphery is lots of tribes that just hunkered down, tried to avoid, didn't have any contact with, so yeah, wouldn't know what he looked like.
And with Daryl as the lookalike, how many people actually get to see him up close?
Yeah,
you know, they only really see him from afar, most of them. And Ebony's one of the only people who knew Martin who gets to see him up close, but she's not in her right mind. You can already imagine her, you know, trying to make sense in her head why there are differences, why he looks a little different to her, you know? And so I was like, okay, all right, I guess that does work, even if I know what he looks like. I know Danny James's face. I know that's not him, but I'm like, most of these kids would not know. They would not be able to recognize. I mean, you should, even nowadays, think about people trying to tell the difference between actors and actresses. You know what I mean? Like, they confuse them all the time. And, you know, So it's like, yeah, it does make sense that most people who saw him would be like, that, I guess that's him, because they don't have photographs of Martin to look at and to compare. This guy lives in their memory for most of them, and they might never have really seen him up close. And yeah. I do wish, though, like, I think about the Mallrats, who have probably seen the most iconography of Zoot. Like, they saw Martin in their mall. They saw him dead on the ground. You know, several of them took him out to burial at sea. They did see his face quite a bit, you know. And then, of course, the Chosen took up shop in their mall with posters of Zoot everywhere. I wish there was at least one Mallrat who was just like, it doesn't quite look right. You know what I mean? Like, something is off about him.
I mean, yeah, just to finish off, like, did you mind that yet another broadcast was interrupted? It just kind of feels
like... You expected it, didn't you? I mean, that was going to
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just a repeating theme, though, at this point. It's like, okay, how many times are we going to have...
The minute they make a big production of the fact that, oh, I'll make an announcement, you're like, okay, this is going to get hijacked.
Yeah. And actually, it is so repeatable that you get the feeling that somebody should have said, oh, hang on, or the jig is up. It's Mega.
Right.
You know,
as soon as that, yeah. As soon as that happened, your first thought should be, oh, this is very familiar. Okay, okay. The last time this happened.
We know this playbook.
The fact that it takes so long for them to look at him as the obvious culprit. Like, he's the one who, again, like I said, if you want a character to be smart in a lazy way, just make everyone else really dumb.
And I mean, the people in the Mallrat are so stupid.
The fact that Jade and Amber don't immediately go, yeah, a broadcast is a good idea to address the city about these rumors, but we know how easily they can be hijacked because we've hijacked the broadcasts before. You know what I mean? And like, there's no other arguments. They're just like, yeah, I guess that's what we should do. Let's just talk to everybody. I'm like, Ellie's paper was more effective at getting news uninterrupted to the populace.
Yeah.
Like, just stop. Stop trying to use to stop it. Like, just meet people in the crowd. You're better off. I get it. I get the reach as many people as possible. Fine. I get it. But it is funny that they don't even argue that. What if it gets hijacked? Because that has happened, and we ourselves have done it. How do we prevent that? What precautions do we have in place to make sure it can't be hijacked? If Ebony's doing this, and we know what Ebony's capable of, you know, we should prepare for anything she might do.
On that note, that brings Series 5, Episode 8, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and we'll see you next time for Episode 9. So until then, bye.
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 Nine already, oh my god.
You know, I can't believe it.